We're talking ghosts. We're talking all sorts of paranormal and maybe a UFO or two or whatever, metaphysics. My guest, Professor Wham, Dr. C.S. Matthews. She's qualified and bona fide. I love that word. Okay, fine. ProfessorWham.com. You're going to be easy to locate. So this is something that's a part of your history. So how did it come about?
Well, Wham, W-H-A-M, is an acronym. So it's this long Arabic name, Wahaba Hadi Al-Mawid, and I have a friend who several years ago just simply refused to pronounce it or spell it. So she just created an acronym. And I started using it as sort of my handle on the Church of Mavis radio podcast that I'm a co-host, occasional co-host on. Then, for some reason, it got picked up here in the Hudson Valley where I live when I started doing presentations. I have a friend named Joe. He, at the time, owned and I say that because his business was one of the casualties of COVID-19.
Oh.
But he had a coffee shop and cafe where I would do presentations. And I'd been doing them for several years, presentations and workshops and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started calling me Professor Lamb. For some reason, I don't know. I thought it was kind of dorky, but other people really liked it. And so that's what a lot of people around here think of me as. And so it's sort of become a secondary handle for me on Facebook. And I thought, well, you know, nobody else has called this. So I just sort of started using it.
I think it's great. It's memorable. It's, you know, you immediately you hear it. It's like there's a fun element, you know, Wham.
Yeah. I mean, when I started using it as a handle, I thought of it as, you know, the superhero kind of Wham, pow, bam,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Some people I've told it to and they're like really offended by it. You know, they think that I'm not taking myself seriously. It's like, well, why would I take myself seriously? I mean, I'm a weirdo and I do weird things. And, you know, might as well have fun with it. Like my website says, you know, it's got like all these paranormal things on it. And it says, you know, the multiverse is strange. Ooh, that's the way we like.
Let's start with strange. Did it start when you were young?
My paranormal interests, if you want to call them that, really started when I was about 6 years old. And I was in the backyard. This was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was in 1967. And I was in the backyard playing with a friend who was some years older than me. In fact, I tend to think she was 12 and I was 6. But why a 12-year-old be playing with a 6-year-old, I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, we were in the backyard. And it was, I remember it was a Sunday because I remember we had come from church. I came from a very religious family. And she spotted it first, but she and I had a very close UFO sighting. And it freaked me out. I mean, I had no frame of reference for it, and it was not a pleasant experience. It was in broad daylight, and it was one of the, you know, retrospectively, you know, at the time I was just a kid, and I didn't understand what was going on, and it frightened me. But, you know, subsequent to that, I looked back on it and realized this happened in broad daylight, and there was, like, nobody else around. And there were, like, us two kids. It was, like, maybe late May, early June, something like that. So mm-hmm. it was not, like, a stormy day outside. So people had to have been around, you would think. It was a very strange experience, but it scared me. I wouldn't talk about it for years. And there were some other odd things that happened to me. I had some strange memories from that time.
Why was it so frightening? Because it sounded it was just a sighting, but what else happened that you had to deep six it?
It was something that was unknown. I mean, we lived close to an airport, and my father, who had been in the military, had pointed out, you know, various types of aircraft that had flown over. This was unlike anything that I had ever seen, and I had no frame of reference for it, even though the late 60s is sort of a time that's known for UFO experiences, you know. I didn't watch a lot of mainstream. I mean, I didn't watch a lot. I watched the news, but they didn't have a lot of this stuff on just the news.
Right,
know?
Right.
So I had no frame of reference for it. And I felt really strongly like whatever it was watching it. What I do remember, it was so unnerving to me personally that I sat with my back to it on the swing while we talked because I didn't want it to look at my face. It looked like the kind of classic saucer pipe, two pie pans, one inverted on top of the other.
Right.
Sort of a lip around it. It was very clearly metallic. It was sort of tilted towards us at a three-quarter angle. It was kind of high in the sky, but horizontally not very far from us at all. I mean, really not. And it had this red dome on top. And I remember the red dome was, it's really hard to describe the red dome. I mean, I can see it in my mind's eye. But there was something about the red dome that I found really disturbing. It was almost like there was something about the red dome that, like, violated my sense of propriety. That's the best way I could put it, which sounds really weird, But all that means to me is that there was something about it that was really unnerving because it was strange. It was unknown. And it just hung there. It didn't float. I mean, it didn't, like, move. It was just like all of a sudden it was there. And my friend said, "What's that?" And I looked up and there it was. I don't know how long we sat there. I mean, maybe there was missing time. I don't know. One of the things that is strange is that I seem to recall that it started in the middle of the afternoon, like maybe about 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. That would have been not long after we got back to church. I remember we'd had lunch, and then I'd gone outside to play with my friend, and we had this weird conversation, she and I. I mean, I'm 6 years old, and we were talking about God, and we were talking about whether there was life on other planets. I mean, it was like it's one of those moments when I became really aware of myself as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like there's something that happened. And then as we were talking, I would glance over my shoulder at it to see if it was still there. Because I didn't want it. It was just like, I didn't want to look at it. And, I didn't think about it at the time, but, thinking about it now as I was as older, it's odd. All of a sudden, her mother called her for dinner, which meant that it had to have been 5 or 6 o'clock. And so she ran off. And I didn't think about it at the time, that how could we have gotten from like 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock that quick? All I know is that she ran off, and all of a sudden I realized I was there alone with it. And I looked up at it, and I just remember this shudder going through me. I mean, it's sheer horror, terror. There's only one other time I've ever felt that. And I ran into the house as fast as I could. We had dinner at then, and then I remember coming around outside of the house, just getting dark, so it was maybe 8 o'clock or something. And I came around the house, and we had this carport, so that if you came out the side of the house and sort of went around the edge of the carport, you could sort of keep yourself concealed from the backyard where we had been,
Yeah.
And so I remember creeping around it and looking around the corner to see if it was still there. This massive sense of relief when I saw it was gone.
Have you ever had a hypnotic regression? Obviously, it sounds like you haven't.
No.
Okay.
No. And I know too much about these things. I would not do this subject.
Definitely, that time distortion suggests that there was something else going on, and not only that, the fear that didn't go away.
Well, I knew better than to tell my parents about stuff because they were very religious and very concerned with, anything that might smack of the occult or weird or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, I learned very, very early on not to tell them anything. And it wasn't until years later that I found out that an older cousin of mine on my father's side had had a series of experiences in Iowa, of which I do not know very many. I mean, he refuses to talk about them. He tried to kind of tell us at the time when they were happening. According to one story, he told he actually, apparently saw somebody, like an entity or something, in a cornfield or something. His parents laughed at him and didn't believe him, and so he kept stuff secret, too. But he and I sort of found some common purpose for a little while until he quit talking about it entirely.
Dr. C.S. Matthews, Professor Wham. So that's the UFO thing. And then there's paranormal stuff. And the book is Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley. You can check it out on our website, ProfessorWham.com. Okay, there's also a serial killer connection. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, C.S. Matthews, Dr. C.S. Matthews, website, ProfessorWham.com. Once lived in a haunted house in Kansas City, Olathe. Not going to give you the address. Also had a connection with a serial killer. Yeah, a business deal. But I ran across him while doing the auctions at KCPT Channel 19 for like a couple of decades. Interesting anomaly. And I guess I could go ahead and say the name Bob Berdella. Did you ever feel uncomfortable around him?
You know, he didn't treat me the way that he treated a lot of other people. You know, I was really aware of the fact that he sort of, especially at the shop, I was really aware of the fact that he talked down to other people sometimes or was kind of distant or weird or mocking of other people. Maybe it's because I worked for someone who whose power he respected, you know, in terms of the boss that I worked for, you know, they were business associates. But my relationship with him had always been sort of on a professional level. You have to understand, I mean, when I didn't see him enough times and have, at least earlier in the time when I knew him, to really get a sense of whether I was uncomfortable with him or not. Now, when I did work with him in his shop, there were times when his moods were weird, you know. And there were a couple of times where I was uncomfortable with him in the sense that I didn't know exactly what to do with his mood. But I never felt endangered by him. I never felt like I was in danger, and now I know that I wasn't. You know, I wouldn't have been his victim of choice anyway. And at one point, he told me in so many terms that he regarded me as a friend, whatever that means that meant to him. So I might have been in a different category than other people, so he might have seen me in a different category and treated me differently, you know? I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the conclusion that I've drawn. I never felt endangered by him. I never felt a sense of danger from him. I do know people that said that they did. I'm not doubting them. I just didn't feel that directed at me.
In terms of, you know, showing up for the auction and being there, I remembered him as being more of a loner, pleasant and courteous, but a private person, you know. So, but I just remember doing that constant spiel of Bob's Bazaar. And it was just that thing of, wow. You know, so I think it had to do with the fact that there was no secret, you know, and it turns out there were a lot of secrets.
Right. Well, and the thing is, I mean, it's sort of like I've said to people before, it's like, that's sort of the shtick of a serial killer. And, you know, that's sort of what the gig requires, especially if you're going to be, I mean, I say that, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but that's sort of true. I mean, it's like, if you're going to be a public person or a semi-public person, as he was, you know, kind of like John Wayne Gacy,
yeah,
like he was, then you're going to have to somehow in your own brain deeply compartmentalize what you're doing. And so he obviously had to do that up to a point, you know. And again, I'm not being flippant. To me, it's sort of obvious, and, you know, the years of having to deal with this and think about this. From what I can tell, just based on, you know, what I know about the case and, you know, sort of stuff that I found out behind the scenes and, you know, all this kind of stuff, he wasn't thinking about doing that stuff all the time. He did actually think of other things too, you know, and so, and he did have a life prior to all of that stuff. And if that's true and you have to compartmentalize, then you're going to have to somehow keep up the appearance of all this other stuff too. Frankly, it seems like a lot of work to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, again, I am not trying to be flippant. I'm just trying to say, you know, he obviously didn't do it very well at a certain point because, you know, he was really sloppy with his last purported victim, and he got caught and arrested, and thank God. Seriously, thank God.
Going back into the stuff that you do and working, you know, going the area that you're writing, the Hudson Valley that you're writing about with the haunted places there, the way you talk about keeping certain things separate. I think when you're investigating or you're researching things like that, you have to have a degree of objectivity or you get sucked into everything and start making up fiction instead of being more conscientious about why is this happening and what am I projecting versus what I'm receiving. And it sounds like you're very good at compartmentalizing and keeping things in order so that you don't jump to conclusions and misdirect yourself or others. Does that make sense?
Well, I do try. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm not emotionally unaffected by things. Growing up in the household where I did, I had to learn to compartmentalize too, or otherwise I would never have survived it. Some of this is training, and some of it is experience. You know, I mean, when I got my graduate degrees, I sort of learned how to do interviews and how to let people talk about their experiences and not edit them. You know, because the book that I wrote about the Hudson Valley, it's really not about my experiences. I mean, I do share a couple, but it's mostly about what other people have experienced. And the other thing about collecting other people's accounts is you have to keep yourself really neutral. You do learn an ability to kind of sort for the accounts that might actually have some kind of merit from those that are just clearly crap, you know, because there's always some people that are trying to tell you their stories. And after you've heard a few thousand of them, you can kind of tell what the real ones are and what the unreal ones are.
ProfessorWham.com. Dreams, Ruins, Synchronicity, and a Serial Killer. That was the blog.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, thinking about you needed to unpack a few things. So you're still unpacking.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, when going to something like knowing a serial killer, you're going to unpack that one for probably most of your life. And if you unpack that one too easily, then you haven't really unpacked anything. You've just noticed the luggage and then shoved it in the back of the closet. As I look back on my life, I've realized just how much of my life was played out in symbolism. I've always been a news junkie, so I always paid attention to the news, like the mainstream news.
Yeah.
And I used to get in a lot of trouble because I would watch. I called him Uncle Walter Cronkite.
Yes.
And my mom would always want me to come in for dinner, and she would have to pull me away from Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite, you know, come in and have dinner, you know. And so, you know, I was aware of what was going on, but I didn't always understand it, you know. So I thought of it in terms of these highly symbolic kinds of images and feelings. And so what I remember a lot as a child, like the UFO experience or some of the other more terrifying experiences that I had, you know, I remember the emotions of them more than, and that's what the emotions are surrounding the details is what I remember.
I hope that you eventually do write some of your stories, your personal stories. I think it's wonderful that you're writing about the Hudson Valley. That's a whole different thing. That's history. That's the different stories, the mindset of the people in that region. But you have a lot that I think you could contribute by sharing some of the things that you've weathered and the way that you've chosen to do it. So in hearing you talk, I was so glad that you were talking about these things because I think the more we talk, the more we learn. And each person has their own way, very unique way of engaging with these realities that some of us can learn and take a few tips and, you know, go forward. But I do think that you have a very good handle on how it works for you. And that's inspiring.
Good. I'm glad that I'm not insane.
No. Well, I didn't say that now.
No, I know you didn't. You know, it's like it's slightly crazy. But,
you're grounded. Okay, you're grounded, and you may have to deal with crazy things.
Well, I've worked for that. I've worked on that. That's been a goal of mine. You know, since you asked me about my name at the very beginning.
Yeah.
I will say that my spiritual practices have helped a lot. That was quite a quest, too, as I've gone through without those practices of meditation and contemplation. And I don't know, I think I would have been locked up, honestly, before now, or something dreadful would have happened to my mind. For people that are really interested in paranormal stuff or psychic stuff or any of that, you know, any of these odd topics, I do find that a lot of times you'll handle some of the difficult stuff a little bit better if you have something to ground yourself in and have some kind of some way to give yourself kind of a normal life, because there are times when whatever it is the other reality, however we want to put it. I'm sounding like a David Lynch movie right now, but the other reality will suddenly break through in one way or another. And if you don't have your own sense of self and balance, you know, it can really screw you up.
And we're going to take a quick break. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. The book is Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley. And why is it special? Dr. C.S. Matthews lives in the area, and what she's done is pull together the stories. If you're familiar with Skinwalker Ranch or Area 51, this is the intro to the book, talks about how large this area is. And she says things like the events and the activities that are reported in those places have long been a part of the Hudson Valley in New York State. 7,200 square miles on either side of the Hudson River. And that's 315 miles from New York City, far to the north of Albany. And so this is an area known for all sorts of events, haunted structures, strange lights in the sky, mysterious creatures, you know, Fortean, anything that you can imagine. That's what it's about. She's trying to map this out. So that's on her website at ProfessorWham.com. She's collected stories from people who live in the area. But living in the area means you're going to have a story of your own. Here's part of the story you're going to hear later.
And all of a sudden, there was like a whoosh of wind, and it disappeared. It had been like a deer-shaped piece of fog. It had just like, and it was gone.
Mysterious Beauty is the name of the book, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley, by Dr. C.S. Matthews, and it's Professor Wham to you. You're listening, ProfessorWham.com. That's how you find her. I'm hoping you've got some more stories, so there's another book, and maybe a little bit of your stuff will be there.
Well, I mean, there is a little bit of my stuff in the book. Like in the introduction, I do share an interesting experience that I had, whatever kind of experience it was, right after I moved here. I had a funny little experience that's kind of, I've considered sort of an initiation to the magic of the Hudson Valley, to the magic that is here. And I can tell you that story really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
I was teaching an evening class, and this happened on the other side of the river from where I live. For people who are unfamiliar, in Kansas City, the Hudson River runs from New York City all the way up a little past Albany, past Albany up into the Adirondacks, the headwaters. But I live kind of right in the middle of the main part of the river, about halfway up to Albany.
Mm-hmm.
And I live on the west side of the river, but this happened on the east side of the river. And there are some differences, because on the west side of the river, we have the Catskills. So we have these highlands, you know, just to the north, and it creates a different set of weather patterns than it does on the east side.
Okay.
It's a little bit, at least in the mid-Hudson, I mean, there are some hills further south, like in Putnam County and stuff, but up in Dutchess County, which is across from where this happened, it's kind of lowlands there. So what tends to happen is in the fall, fall and the spring, you'll have these huge temperature shifts during the day and the night. So it can be like 70, almost 80 degrees during the day, and then fall to the 30s at night.
Okay.
Just boom. You know, so as soon as the sun goes down, it's like, you know,
yeah.
it gets pretty chilly. And as a result of that, there's this beautiful fog that you know, it'll form on the river, and it'll roll out of the river and just sort of roll over, especially on the Dutchess County side, just sort of roll out and just sort of roll around, kind of these weird tendrils and it's hard to describe. It's just like you might imagine in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll sort of creep along the roads, you know.
Okay.
As with the air currents and stuff. But anyway, I was teaching an evening class, and it was a late class. So since I taught another class early in the morning, the next morning, what I tended to do is, instead of driving all the way home on my commute, I would stay at a friend's house And she lived right on the river, or right near the river at the time. And so I was coming down this side road, and it was sort of like up on a hill, and I was coming down, and so my headlights were like lighting ahead of me, you know, maybe about, you know, half a mile ahead of me. And I noticed, and there was fog around, you know, but it looked sort of clear where I was at the time, and I was headed down and into this sort of little dip. And I noticed in the headlights a deer standing in the middle of the road. And it was clear, it clearly illumined in my headlights. So I continued on, and I figured that it would move out of the way, you know, just like in places in Kansas, deer everywhere, so people get hit. People hit them all the time.
Yeah.
So I was coming down, but it didn't seem to be moving. It just sort of like was standing there, stock still. And I was coming closer to it, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd. You know, why is it moving? I kind of could kind of see it in the three-quarter view. And so I started slowing down because it was like, who knows why, but it's not moving, you know. And so I was like almost at a crawl. I was going to like honk at it, you know, that close to it. And all of a sudden, there was like a whoosh of wind, and it disappeared. It had been like a deer-shaped piece of fog. It had just like, and it was gone. And as I rolled up to where it had been, I noticed, because of my headlights, on the side of the road, a deer that had just been hit by a car.
Oh.
And the reason why I could tell that it had just been hit was that it was its body was still warm. It was steaming up into the... But it had not... I had seen this deer, and it had just whooshed away.
Oh, wow. I got goosebumps.
So, yeah, it was just like... I mean, I just drove through by where the deer was, and I was just like,
wow.
Did I just see a deer ghost?
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was like my introduction to the Hudson Valley. You know, I'd lived there like 3 months. What's your 3 months? And already there was this, but it was, there was something sad and beautiful about it. All at once. And I just thought, wow, what a trip, you know? And I've had a number of really interesting experiences. You know, I've experienced, I had my first, for a really long time, a poltergeist experience, not in the house. Although there is actually some folks who live in the house where I live in now.
Uh-huh.
But they're just memories of the house. They're not like...
active?
They're active on occasion, but it's like the house has memories. This house where I live is one of the oldest houses on this particular road.
Okay.
And so it just has memories, you know. And so sometimes at night it lives with memories. You know what I mean?
Reminiscing, yes.
Yeah, well, it does. You know, I mean, I do think of houses as kind of like living beings, and you know,
yes,
as people pass through them, especially when they're old, they'll accumulate things. And I'm sitting right on a spring. I mean, the yard that we live in, there are like at least 4 springs and 2
lots
wells
of energy, yeah,
on the land that I live on. So, but you know, I've had all kinds of, I mean, in the experiences that I've had, they've been really different in the sense that they seem normal for the area. You know, they're similar to the kinds of experiences that other people have here. Although sometimes when I've had them, I haven't known that. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
I've had an experience, and then I find out later, oh, people have these experiences like this here, you know, or in this area. And so, but I do talk about a couple of experiences like that in the book, you know.
Okay.
So that's how I introduce the book is, you know, at the end of the first chapter, or introduction, I talk about that deer experience, the deer ghost.
ProfessorWham.com, that's the website. Paranormal Hudson Valley, information there, and a map that lays out where these haunted places are. She has studied religion, new religious movements, occultism, paranormal experiences for over 4 decades, so she knows a thing or two about what we're talking about today. In the next segment, we're going to find out more about that doctorate, where it came from, Uh-huh. UFOs. That's what's involved. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Dr. C.S. Matthews, Professor Wham, ProfessorWham.com. That's the website. Ghosts, UFOs, all sorts of paranormal.
It's helpful that you have had your own experiences because it helps other people connect when you know you're talking to somebody who already has an idea of what you're going through, that it's real and it's not fiction, then you can have a better conversation.
Well, yeah. You know, when I did my dissertation on UFO abductees, I obviously came to my interest in UFOs, honestly.
You did this at KU in Kansas.
At KU.
A dissertation on UFOs.
UFO abduction.
Okay, fine.
UFO abduction story. So there's a difference.
Okay,
well, I also did my master's on UFO narratives as transformative stories. So I did both my master's and my PhD on UFO topics.
No way. If I had only known.
Well, you can get copies of these things. You know, it's not like it's far distant archives, you know.
And still, to me, it's mind-boggling that you did it at KU.
Well, you know, you do it, but you do these things within certain contexts. So, you know, and for the master's, it was in religious studies, and I did it within the context of I had studied or I specialized in studying visions, visionary experiences, and religious experiences. And my director for my master's had been Sandra Zimdar Schwartz, who I think is retired now. She was, at the time, one of the international experts on marionette apparitions. When people have UFO experiences, especially really close experiences, that a lot of people who have these experiences, there's sort of like a before and an after. Their life is changed by this experience. So I looked at the kinds of ways in which these stories operate as sort of transformative moments, you know, an inflection point for the person. And I looked at the different kinds of inflection points, because for some people, these are really negative experiences, and for some people they are not, or for some people they're both. And I also drew on a study that was done, it was published in the 1990s by Dr. Kenneth Ring, called the Omega Report. And of course, he had studied near-death experiences and how those are inflection points for a lot of people, and had compared those kinds of narratives with UFO narratives and found that there were similar mm-hmm. kinds of things, but not identical. There were some differences too, but there were similar kinds of antecedents for a lot of people who report certain types of UFO experiences. You know, I did it from that perspective, and the PhD thesis seems more timely now in an odd way. I think I was a little bit before my time. Based on my field research for my master's thesis, I had discovered that there was, at the time, and still is probably to some degree, a real divide between alien contact and abduction experiences that are reported by people of color, and black people in particular, African Americans, and by, you know, white Americans, or, you know, Americans of European heritage, and how when we think of the UFO abduction narrative, the standard narrative that we tend to think of, you know, that was first expressed probably in the X-Files and all that, that those are largely taken from white sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and those are the kinds of narratives that are sort of privileged, if you will. So if you're looking at the Betty and Barney Hill case, for example, the only thing about Barney's experience that is really sort of privileged in that whole narrative between the, you know, about when they talk about the Hill account, is his fear. Is his fear and his pain. And the reason for that, I talk about this in the dissertation, is because we will regard pain and fear as real, as an index of the real, okay? But the other components of his story, you know, some of the things that he says, the initial things that he says about the appearance of the aliens, the very first thing he says about them is they look like Irishmen. It's the very first thing he says in the regressive hypnosis. And his response to them is clearly mediated on his past experience as an African-American, having had other kinds of terrifying experiences, being chased down, being ridiculed, you know, things like that. And it really, and it's really reflected in the way that he talks about the experience to begin with. But that's not what people remember. They remember the components of Betty Hill's experience,
right.
his white wife, and the star map and all this other stuff. And what's interesting about all of that, as I went through the dissertation and did it, is I found that Betty actually was not unaware of this. Betty was aware of how their narrative had been used. And she wrote a book before her death where she talks about some of this stuff, and which was roundly ignored
by
the rest of the UFO community.
Yeah.
And although her niece, who you did interview, she is aware of some of these things too. And that there was a much larger, as you know, sort of paranormal context to their entire experience, both before and after the experience itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, but the dissertation deals with sort of the weird sort of racial and ethnic subtext that are in the popular narrative, not necessarily in individual experiences, although sometimes, but that part of the, you know, the narrative that we tell and our entertainment industry will tell. And I use examples of movies that were popular at the time. I mean, the dissertation is like over 20 years old now, so there are parts of it that are kind of dated,
yeah,
that we need to be updated. Oddly enough, I have had more requests for it in the last 3 years than I ever had when I first did it.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
I guess it's suddenly totally topical.
Yes, and there's something about it right now. This stuff is absolutely on fire. I mean, 25 years ago when I was into some of this, it was crickets, absolute crickets. And then in the past 5 years, it has just absolutely launched itself. And that's, I guess, you know, evolution.
Well, whatever it is, I don't know. I mean, I think it is interesting. I for those of us who've studied it all of our lives, we're kind of like, you know, I mean, people have to understand why we might be suspicious, you know, so
yeah,
that when, you know,
yeah,
when the Pentagon finally admitted that, yeah, you know, it had these videos, you
oh
know,
yeah,
this was what, 3 years ago.
Sorry and, about all the I people had, that we harassed, making them think that they were crazy and telling the communities that they lived in that they were crazy.
Right. But when those stories, you know, were published, I had friends that were like, did you see this? Did you see? And I'm like, yeah. But why are they doing it now?
Yes.
I mean,
that's my
response to that. It's like, why are they doing this now?
Yeah.
This is not news.
Yeah.
I mean, like, none of this news.
It's old.
You
it's
know
old.
What I mean? It's, first,
yeah.
it's old.
The dates that they're throwing out are old. So it's like,
yeah,
the magician.
Yeah.
Look this way because something else is happening over there.
Exactly. You know, and whether this is true or not, I have absolutely no idea because we have no contact for any of those videos.
If you're not into a book on this, just throw out a few blogs.
Yeah. I've been busy lately with the end of school, so you know, I do plan to write more. I was thinking about this just the other day. You know, what can I write in my blog?
Okay,
there are several things actually.
Well, you've got your marching orders, right? So anyway, I appreciate your time. I love the fact that you are so diverse and you have all of these experiences to draw from and the stories that you're telling with the people that you've interviewed too. And again, the book, Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley. And just the way you describe it, it sounds magical. So again, the book, Dr. C.S. Matthews, and the website, ProfessorWham.com. Thank you.
It was fun. Thanks.
Feel free to check out the shows in the archives. 5 years of shows now. How time flies. And you can also follow along on the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com. Thanks for listening.